Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.
And good morning to you. This is Breakfast Business with me, Emmett Oliver, in for Joe Lynam this morning, and you're very welcome along. We have a lot coming up between now and 7am. We have a look at bot traffic, which is taking over the internet at levels that hasn't been previously seen. And of course, we'll have a big dissection of that very strange and peculiar US-UK trade deal yesterday, just how much meat is on the bone. We'll be talking to a trade expert from UCD about that this morning. But before we do any of that, let's look through this morning's papers in the company of Aidan Donnelly from Davy. Good morning to you, Aidan.
Good morning, Emmett. How are you?
Very well indeed. We'll start with the Irish Times, which has an interesting story about the world of airports and travel, which is that the Dublin Airports Authority is reviewing their big duty-free business, which has been doing well for them generally over years, but there seems to be some kind of a talk about what its future direction might be.
Yeah, this is, they announced yesterday that they're reviewing the international duty-free and the consulting operations that they run. And I suppose, you know, the one thing to state is that Kenny Jacobs, the chief executive of the AA, has said there's no plans to seek a buyer for either of the subsidiaries. But I think what's interesting here is ARI, which is Air India International, is considered likely contender in an awful lot of potential big bids coming up, particularly for concessions in Dubai Airport, one is going to be one of the world's largest ones. And what a lot of people may not realise is they actually run duty-free shops in 27 airports across 13 countries. So it's a fairly substantial business that's there. Now, they have had a bit of a setback in recent times where they didn't win contracts for duty-free concessions in JFK and in Iceland and even in Belfast. But, you know, there are certain contracts up for renewal coming up. And I think, you know, it's a question of whether the company put money behind these businesses or whether they kind of decide what the strategic rationale for owning them is. And on the consulting side of it, you know, they've had some very big operations or very big wins over the years. They were going to be in for the Saudi Arabia to manage the new airport there. And it came close to a deal for an airport in Kuwait, but the last government vetoed that. So, look, I think the one thing they're looking at is potentially, you know, they're not going to sell it, maybe looking to try to get external capital into both businesses under the umbrella of the state ownership. So it'll be an interesting one, but ultimately it is a decent business.
Yeah, it's been kind of nourishing them along for quite a few years when the airport, the core part, wasn't doing so well. Aidan, if I could direct your attention to the Irish Independent, they're talking about Cairn, the big property company, house builder, of course. Their AGM took place yesterday, and we've saw some interesting comments in there. Certainly for me anyway, the comment from their chief executive was about how many houses we are capable in this state of building, and his name, Michael Stanley, he says we can get to 50,000, but he said we don't have the land to build 50,000 houses every year, and that if you want to build more, apartments have to become a big part of the building programme. I thought that was quite interesting that he's saying there is a mismatch about what we are actually building.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good point. But I think another very good point in there is that he is saying that, you know, the mix between office and residential is not sustainable in terms of our cities. If we want to have big, vibrant cities, we've got to get more people living in them rather than just working in them. And what he's saying basically is, you know, if the government want to get 50,000 houses a year, 25,000 of them are going to have to be apartments. And, you know, he said you can build 25,000 low density homes a year, every year. There's no problem with that, but it's not really in the cities. And therefore, when you're looking at that, you need to be looking at the city centres and apartment blocks. He says the ratio of office build to apartment build in Dublin right now, in centre Dublin right now, is about 6 to 7 square metres of office for every 1 square metre of residential. He says it's just, you know, it's not sustainable if you want to actually start meeting the long-term goals of houses in the major cities. And what's interesting too for me, Emmett, is he's not just saying this is a Dublin thing, is this issue in Cork is not dissimilar.
Yeah, we're just not set up to build the sort of government targets. It's nice to have the target, but the actual reality on the ground is somewhat different. If I could also take you to the Examiner, where what I call the long walk of the government and state leaving the Irish banking sector. According to the headline there, the state's shareholding in AIB has now fallen to 3.3% following a special share buyback arrangement that was agreed yesterday. Of course, all of this happened back in 2011 and 12, where the state poured billions into the leading Irish banks. And gradually, very slowly and laboriously, it's been coming out of there. So what do you make of this latest deal? And do you expect the state to exit in 2025 overall?
Yeah, look, the timing of this is in terms of whether when the full exit is done is always difficult and will depend on the markets. But ultimately, you know, the pillar banks have, generated a lot of cash flow over the last few years. And it makes sense because ultimately the government should never be a long-term owner of either of these businesses. And, you know, they've extricated themselves from Bank of Ireland. They're doing the same from AIB. It makes much more sense for the bank to deal directly with the shareholder rather than trying to find another shareholder in the markets for the stock that the government wants to reduce. So look, I think this makes absolute sense. I'd say it'll continue.
Now, let me talk to you about events across the water, across the Irish Sea. Yesterday, obviously, we have this big trade deal between Donald Trump and Keir Starmer announced. I'll have a little bit about that after the break. But also the Bank of England making a move on interest rates, which meant it was a very heavy news day for the UK economy. Can you just tie all the loose ends together for us?
Yeah, like I think on the trade side of it was very unexpected that the UK has kind of jumped the queue. But I think when you look at it, it's a quick win for trying to think that there's going to be bigger wins in terms of EU, Japan, China, and things like that. I think I wouldn't read anything into the UK. They've been in discussions long before this tariff announcement. The UK only faced an initial 10% reciprocal tariff. And it's one of the few trading partners partners actually has a trade deficit with the US. I don't think there's much of a read through to the other ones, because I think the Trump administration wants to use tariffs to address a broad range of issues. If you look at Japan, it's going to be foreign exchange. If you look at the EU, it's about VAT and subsidies. And look, in terms of China, I think the off ramp for China is going to be very protracted and piecemeal. So I don't think, you know, you can necessarily.
Talk us through the Bank of England piece, because that got kind of neglected in yesterday's media noise.
It certainly did. And look, they've lowered interest rates by 25 basis points. But I think the surprise came that in terms of who was voting for what, because, you know, you had five members who voted for a rate cut, but two members actually looked for a 0.5% rate cut and two looked for none at all. So the statement is very much around, look, you know, the news was sufficient at this moment in time for a 25 basis point cut, but that's it. So I think it's leaving the impression that, you know, it's not a guarantee that we get another cut in June. It's unlikely we do. The market is certainly pricing in sequential cuts in August and September. But judging by what they said and some of the forecasts that they put out, you know, I think there's so much uncertainty out there about the global economy and what tariffs do to inflation that are not dissimilar to the US. We've seen a lot of central banks trying to hedge their bets just for now, and that terrible phrase of being data dependent is just going to be trotted out quite a bit over the next few months.
Yeah, when the central banker is caught in a corner, that tends to be the phrase they resort to, isn't it? Whether it's in Europe, Washington, or anywhere else. Listen, we leave it there for the moment. We've plenty of fun and games ahead over the summer months to look at, both on the international markets, but also in the trade area specifically. Aidan Donnelly of Davy, thank you very much for talking to us.
Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.